"So we will see you on the 23rd, he told Rayan, as they parted. "I expect that you will have an audience of at least 100, and I have even had a reporter from the Yorkshire Post on to me. They have heard about your lectures, and they want to do an interview with you. Jolly good publicity for the department. You will do it, of course. Could you come a couple of hours early to speak to them?" "Actually, I'll probably see you before the 23rd, she told him. "Mummy and her dog are picking up at Quentin Park on Thursday, and she's got me a job as a beater for the day." "I'll keep an eye open for you," he promised, and waved to her as she pulled away in a cloud of exhaust smoke. The wind was searing cold out of the north. The clouds tumbled over each other, heavy and blue and grey, so close to earth that they brushed the crests of the hills as they hurried ahead of the gale. Rayan wore 3 layers of clothing under the old green barber jacket that Georgina had lent her, but still she shivered as they came up over the brow of the hills in the line of beaters. Her blood had thinned in the heat of the Nile Valley. 2 pairs of fisherman's socks were not enough to save her toes from turning numb. For this drive, the last of the day, the head keeper had moved Georgina from her usual position behind the line of guns, where she and Magic were expected to pick up the crippled birds that came through to them, into the line of beaters. Keeping the best for last, they were beating the high larches. The keeper needed every man and woman he could get into the line to bring in the pheasant from the huge piece of ground on top of the hills and to push them off the brow, out over the valley where the guns waited at their pegs far below. It seemed to Rayan a supreme piece of illogical behaviour to rear and nurture the pheasants from chicks and then, when they were mature, go to such lengths to make them as difficult to shoot as the keeper could devise. However, Georgina had explained it to her that the higher and harder to hit the birds passed over the guns, the more pleased the sportsmen were, and the more they were willing to pay for the privilege of firing at them. "You cannot believe what they'll pay for a day's shooting," Georgina had told her. "Today will bring in almost £14,000 to the estate. They will shoot 20 days this season. Work that out and you will see that the shoot is a major part of the estate's income. Quite apart from the fun of working the dogs and beating, it gives a lot of us local people a very useful bit of extra money." At this stage of the day, Rayan was not too certain just how much fun there was to be had from the job of beating. The walking was difficult in thick brambles, and Rayan had slipped more than once. There was mud on her knees and elbows. The ditch ahead of her was half filled with water, and there was a thin skin of ice across the surface. She approached it gingerly, using her walking stick to balance herself. She was tired, for there had already been 5 drives, all as onerous as this one. She glanced across at her mother and marvelled at how she seemed to be enjoying this torture. Georgina strode along happily, controlling Magic with her whistle and hand signals. She grinned at Rayan now. "Last lap, love. Nearly over." Rayan was humiliated that her distress had been so obvious, and she used her stick to help her vault the muddy ditch. However, she miscalculated the width and fell short of the far bank. She landed knee-deep in the frozen water, and it poured in over the top of her Wellington boots. Georgina laughed at her and offered her the end of her own stick to pull her out of the glutinous mud. Rayan could not hold up the line by stopping to empty her flooded boots, so she went on, squelching loudly with each pace. "Steady on the left," the order from the head keeper was relayed over the walkie-talkie radio, and the line halted obediently. The art and skill of the keeper was to flush the birds from the tangled undergrowth, not in one massed covey, but in a steady trickle that would pass over the waiting guns in singles and pairs, giving them the chance, after they had fired 2 barrels, to take their 2nd gun from the loader and be ready for the next bird to appear in the sky high above them. The size of the keeper's tip and his reputation depended on the way he showed the birds to the waiting guns. During this respite, Rayan was able to regain her breath and to look around her. Through a break in the grove of larches that gave the drive its name, she could see down into the valley. There was an open meadow at the foot of the hills, the expanse of smooth green grass broken up by patches of dirty grey snow from the previous week's fall. Down this meadow the keeper had set a line of numbered pegs. At the beginning of the day's sport, the guns had drawn lots to decide the peg number from which each of them would shoot. Now each man stood at his allotted peg, with his loader holding his second gun ready behind him, ready to pass it over when the first gun was empty. They were all looking up expectantly to the high ground from which the pheasant would appear. "Which is Sir Nicholas?" Ryan called to her mother, and Georgina pointed to the far end of the line of guns. "The tall one," she said. And at that moment the keeper's voice on the radio ordered, "Gently on the left, start tapping again." Obediently, the beaters tapped their sticks. There was no shouting or hallooing in this delicate and strictly controlled operation. Forward slowly, halt to the flush of birds. A step at a time, the line moved ahead, and in the brambles and bracken in front of her, Royan could hear the stealthy scuffle of a number of pheasants moving forward, reluctant to take to the air until they were forced to do so. There was another ditch in their path. This one choked with an almost impenetrable thicket of brambles. Some of the larger dogs, like the Labradors, balked at entering such a thorny barrier. Georgina whistled sharply, and Magic's ears went up. He was soaked, and his coat was a matted mess of mud and burrs and thorn. His pink tongue lolled from the corner of his grinning mouth, and the sodden stump of his tail was wagging merrily. At that moment he was the happiest dog in England. He was doing the work that he'd been bred for. "Come on, Magic," Georgina ordered. "Get in there! Come on! Get them out!" Magic dived into the thickest and thorniest patch and disappeared completely from view. There was a minute of snuffling and rooting around in the depths of the ditch, and then a fierce cackle and flurry of wings. A pair of birds exploded out of the bushes. The hen led the way. She was a drab, nondescript creature the size of a domestic fowl, but the cockbird that followed her closely was magnificent. His head was capped with iridescent green, and his cheeks and wattles were scarlet. His tail, barred in cinnamon and black, was almost as long again as his body, and the rest of his plumage was a riot of gorgeous colour. As he climbed, he sparkled against the lowering grey sky like a priceless jewel thrown from an emperor's hand. Ryan gasped at the beauty of the sight. "Just look at them go!" Georgina's voice was thick with excitement. "What a pair of crackerjacks! The best pair today! My bet is that not one of the guns will touch a feather on either of them." Up, and then on up, the two birds climbed, the hen drawing the cock after her, until suddenly the wind boiling over the hills like overheated milk caught them both and flung them away out over the valley. The line of beaters enjoyed the moment. They'd worked hard for it. Their voices were tiny and faint on the wind as they urged the birds on. They loved to see a pheasant so high and fast that it could beat the guns. "Forward!" they exulted. "Over!" And this time the line came involuntarily to a halt as they followed the flight of the pair that were twisting away on the wind. In the valley bottom, the faces of the guns were turned upwards, pale specks against the green background. Their trepidation was almost palpable as they watched the pheasant reach their maximum speed, so that they could no longer beat their wings, but locked them into a backswept profile as they began to drop down into the valley. This was the most difficult shot that any gun would face. A high pair of pheasant, with a half-gale quartering from behind, dropping into the shot at their terminal rate of flight, set to pass over the line at the extreme effective range of a 12-bore shotgun. For the men below, it was a calculation of speed and lead in all three dimensions of space. The best of shots might hope to take one of them, but who would dare to think of both? "A pound on it," Georgina called. "A pound that they both get through." But none of the beaters who heard her accepted the wager. The wind was pushing the birds gently sideways. They started off aimed at the centre of the line, but they were drifting towards the far end. As the angle changed, Rowan could see the men at the pegs below her brace themselves in turn as the birds appeared to be heading straight for them, and then relax as the wind moved them on. Their relief was evident, as one after the other, each of them was absolved from the challenge of having to make such an impossible shot with all eyes fastened upon him. In the end, only the tall figure at the extreme end of the line stood in their flight path. "Your bird, sir," one of the other guns called mockingly, and Royan found that instinctively she was holding her breath with anticipation. Nicholas Quentin Harper seemed unaware of the approach of the pair of pheasant. He stood completely relaxed, his tall frame slouching slightly, his shotgun tucked under his right arm with the muzzles pointing at the ground. At the moment that the leading hen bird reached a point in the sky 60 degrees out ahead of him, he moved for the first time. With casual grace, he swung the shotgun up in a sweeping arc. At the instant that the butt touched his cheek and shoulder, he fired, but the gun never stopped moving and went on to describe the rest of the arc. The distance delayed the sound of the shot reaching Royan. She saw the barrels kick with the recoil and a pale spurt of blue smoke from the muzzle. Then Nicholas lowered the gun as the hen suddenly threw back her head and closed her wings. There was no burst of feathers from her body, for she had been hit cleanly in the head and killed instantly. As she began the long plummet to earth, Royan heard the thud of the shot. By then the cock was high over Nicholas's head. This time, as he mounted the gun in that casual sweeping gesture, he arched his back to point upwards, his long frame bending from the waist like a drawn bow. Once again, at the apex of the swing, the weapon kicked in his grasp. "He has missed," Rayan thought, with a mixture of satisfaction and disappointment, as the cock sailed on, seemingly unscathed. Part of her wanted the beautiful bird to escape, while part of her wanted the man to succeed. Gradually the profile of the high cock altered as the wings folded back and it rolled over in flight. Rayan had no way of knowing that his heart had been struck through until seconds later he died in midair and the locked wings lost their rigid set. As the cock tumbled to earth, a spontaneous chorus of cheers ran down the line of beaters, faint but enthusiastic on the icy north wind. Even the other guns added their voices with cries of, "Oh, good shot, sir!" Rayan did not join in the cheering, but for the moment her fatigue and cold were forgotten. She could only vaguely appreciate the skill that those two shots had called for, but she was impressed, even a little awed. Her very first glimpse of the man had fulfilled all the expectations that Duryad's stories about him had raised in her. By the time the last drive ended, it was almost dark. An old army truck came rumbling down the track through the forest along which the tired beaters and their dogs waited. As it slowed, they scrambled up into the back. Georgina gave Royan a boost from behind before she and Magic followed her up. They settled, thankfully, on one of the long, hard benches, and Georgina lit a cigarette as she joined in the chat and banter of the underkeepers and beaters around her. Royan sat silently at the end of the bench, enjoying the sense of achievement at having come through such a strenuous day. She felt tired and relaxed and strangely contented. For one whole day she had not thought either of the theft or the scroll or of Duryad's murder and the unknown and unseen enemy who threatened her with a violent death. The truck ground down the hill and slowed as it reached the bottom, pulling into the verge to let a green Range Rover pass. As the two vehicles drew level, Royan turned her head and looked down into the open driver's window of the expensive estate car and into the eyes of Nicholas Quentin Harper at the wheel. This was the first time that she had been close enough to him to see his features. She was surprised at how young he was. She had expected him to be a man of Duryad's age. She saw now that he was no older than 40. For there were only the first strands of silver in the wings of his thick, rumpled hair. His features were tanned and weather-beaten, those of an outdoors man. His eyes were green and penetrating under dark, beetling brows. His mouth was wide and expressive, and he was smiling now at some witticism that the driver of the truck called to him in a thick Yorkshire accent. But there was a sense of sadness and tragedy in the eyes. Royan remembered what the prof had told her of his recent bereavement, and she felt her heart go out to him. She was not alone in her loss and her mourning. He looked directly into her eyes, and she saw his expression change. She was an attractive woman, and she could tell when a man recognized that. she had made an impression on him. But she did not enjoy the fact. Her sorrow for Duryed was still too raw and painful. She looked away, and the Range Rover drove on.